Welt im Ohr, live. Eine Sendung vom ÖAD-Team für Bildung und Forschung für internationale Entwicklungszusammenarbeit.
Leute im Labor.
Sehr herzlich willkommen, liebe Hörerinnen und Hörer. Sie hören, ihr hört Welt im Ohr. Today we have our program in English and I'd like to welcome also our guest. My name is Mayada Hadaya and hi Caroline Paparo. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Mayada.
Our broadcast is called Welt im Ohr and it's in the framework of OEAD and APEAR. OEAD is Austria's Agency for Education and Internationalization. And APEAR is the academic partnership program between Austria and the priority countries and regions of the Austrian Development Cooperation, with focus on development research. This is an inter- and transdisciplinary area of science. And we will talk about a very particular project. This is why Caroline is here. It's called AMUTI, and this means cooperation, but Caroline will also explain what it really means later on. We will discuss and reflect on some global challenges from a bird's eye view, such as conflicts based on the exploitation of natural resources and the multidimensional inequalities in refugee communities. These are the areas where my guest is working and researching, and I'd like to say a few words about you, Caroline, but you can also correct me. You do much more than I will say now. So you're a development researcher and practitioner from the West Nile region in Uganda. You have experience in academia and civil society, and you hold two masters in international development and refugee and migration studies. You also advocate for the conservation of nature, emphasizing the role of women using indigenous knowledge. And your diverse roles include facilitating and mentoring programs, research and volunteering for initiatives related to youth empowerment, environmental conservation and human rights. And Caroline is currently a PhD scholar through the APEAR scholarship program at the University of Natural Resources and Life Sciences, BUKU, and there at the Institute of Development Research. Right?
Yes, yes.
Caroline?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so you're since a few months in Vienna?
Yes, yes.
And yeah, as I said, you do your PhD here within this project, AMUTI, which we will also present in this show today. And I wanted to first ask you, Caroline, why did you choose to be in this development area, international development, and also all the topics we mentioned now, like migration and also human rights, advocating also for nature and also empowerment of women, girls, youth, and the many things you do. Why did you choose these topics?
Thank you very much, Mayada. Thank you for hosting me. I'm excited to be here and to share my knowledge and experience thus far. I am born and raised from West Nile in Uganda. And for the longest time I can remember, we have interacted with different forms of migration, cross-border trade, refugees, migration as a result of natural disasters. So with that experience growing up, I was always curious to know more about what happens when people move, and also watching women and children being affected the most, I was always curious to know how do people cope. And so this has motivated my inquisition into these areas. And I'm also very keen on nature and our traditional knowledge what our forefathers used, what knowledge they used, what mechanisms they used to address some of these issues, because they're not new. They keep recurring. And so that has driven me to the path I have taken so far. Yeah.
And how did you choose to come to Austria, Vienna?
Yeah, so in before my PhD, I was working in the community and with the refugees and also the host community. And I saw an advert for the project in the local university looking for researchers on the project. And that's how I applied and expressed my interest and, well, successfully.
Interesting.
I'm here.
So yes. It's by hazard, by chance.
Yes.
Very nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
But also because one of the key things the project does is linking development practice and research and linking academia and the community. And that's something that is core for me. I like to research, but also to be able to use this knowledge to transform the community. So it was, I was excited that it offered me that opportunity to learn through experience. So, yeah.
That's great. We will talk about the project Amuti. We will talk about inner African migration a bit and also traditional knowledge and how it is used also in your project. Before a few words on your university, about the university. It's not in the capital of Uganda, Kampala. It's a different area. So maybe a few words on your university. How can we imagine it?
Yes. So the local university that is in partnership on this project is Muni University. It's the first science and technology university in my region. It's government sponsored, and its focus is on using science to transform the community and also teaching skills transfer using science and giving the opportunity to the local community to build their capacity in science. We are very grateful to the government of Uganda for that opportunity, because before then, very many institutions of higher learning were centralized. But then through the government program, government universities were decentralized, and the government situated universities at regional levels. So for the West Nile region, Muni University is a representative of that, to be able to have more students in the area access university education. Yes. And so it has a key component in community engagement, and that's where the Amuti project also sits squarely. And with a high refugee hosting population in the region, it's also important. The university is a great place to interact with knowledge, generate knowledge, and study the phenomena around hosting refugees, the experiences, the human experiences in nature. And universities are ideal to generate knowledge and co-create with the community. And so that's what we want to do in the Amuti project in the long run. Yeah.
And the policies, we will come to talk about it later on, but the policies towards migrants are also very different from those in Europe, from those in Austria, for example. Mm-hmm. So we were talking already about it, and you told me very interesting things. And we will also tell this very interesting things about how the inner migration, the African inner migration is different, and in particular in Uganda to, for example, the Austrian. So let us listen to music also. It's our Christmas show today. It's the last for this year. And we brought a bit music, and let's have a nice break, music break. So welcome back. You're listening to Welt im Ohr. My name is Mayada Hadaya and I'm here with Caroline Paparo. And the title of our show today is Amuti means cooperation. So Amuti is an ongoing project in the framework of APEAR, funded by the Austrian Development Corporation and implemented at the OEAD, Austria's Agency for Education and Internationalization. Amuti stands for Strengthening Transformative Capacity of Higher Education Institutions for Equitable and Resilient Governance of Natural Resources in Refugee Host Community Settings in West Nile, Uganda. This is the region where Caroline Paparo is coming from, and she is currently a PhD candidate within this project. Amuti means working together in your family language, right, Caroline? Can you say a few words on the language and what does it mean? Why did you choose this name also for your project?
Okay, thank you. One of the predominant languages spoken in the West Nile region is the Lugbara language, and in Lugbarati, Amuti means working together. So it speaks to collaborating and working together for a common goal. So I think because the name was appropriate, because if you look at the actors, this is a multidisciplinary project and it has multiple actors. We have the Boku University, Muni University. We also have a local NGO that works directly with the refugees in West Nile that is a partner to this project and is our entry point into the refugee settlements. And we also have, of course, the local government agencies. And then we have the community with whom we work on this project. So multidisciplinary actors working together for a common goal, cooperating together to, you know, co-create solutions to some of the emerging challenges you're facing, like severe effects of climate change, for example. So the Amuti acronym sits squarely, and I believe it's earned its place as the project name, reflecting that working together atmosphere. Yes.
We already mentioned that we want to talk about the aims within your project. A very important topic is migration and refugees. And we already mentioned that inner African migration is very important to the continent and much more common than maybe Europeans can imagine. You also mentioned already that you were very used to live and see, be together with refugees. The policies toward refugees in Uganda are also very welcoming. Mm-hmm. They are very different. Maybe a few words on that, Caroline. So how do you welcome refugees?
Okay. So the Ugandan policy on refugees was passed in 2006, the Ugandan refugee policy, and it's an open door policy practicing the prima facie, which means, for example, when there's active conflict, the borders are open and the refugees are welcome into the country. And so there are reception centers where they are to report to, register, and then they receive the basic needs, some hot meals, some blankets, and some material, some tents, so that they are able to have a housing facility and access to clean water. They get access to medical assistance, some food for nutrition, also to boost their energies. So the policy allows for this. The policy also further allows that once refugees have regained their nutrition, they have regained their strength, they are able to, they are resettled, they are of course, they go through certain programs as well, psychosocial support as well, because they face very many challenges during flight. And so once they get to the, once they've spent some time in the reception center and rejuvenated and gone through integration programs, then they are integrated into the host community. The government, together with the host community, provides land for refugees. So Uganda does not practice encampment, rather a settlement arrangement where refugees get a parcel of land, so about 50 by 50 meters, a plot for a family, and they then use this plot for settling, but also use a portion of it for kitchen gardening so that they are able to grow their own food and also boost their nutrition. Some of these kitchen gardens, from these kitchen gardens, they are able to sell off some of the produce and make some money, so that with this money they are also able to supplement the different foods that they can have. So the policy, other than offering refugees land for settlement, also allows refugees that are qualified to seek employment. So they are able to get employed within the country. And it also allows for free movement. So refugees that can afford a life outside of the settlement are allowed to freely move out, settle in any part of the country, and contribute to the economic development of the community where they settle. So the policy is premised on self-reliance, and the idea is to reduce dependency, so that refugees, as human beings, we respect their human rights, we respect their dignity, and we also respect their right to work, because without one exercising their right to work, they can easily lose their self of sense and also lose their self-esteem. And so in order to keep them, in order to keep an atmosphere where they can enjoy their sense of self and be able to work, the government offers these opportunities, which is also beneficial to the government because they contribute to the economic development in the long run. Yes. So that's course, the policy, refugee policy that the country operates on.
Due to ongoing crisis and civil war, the migration, African migration is also increasing. And yeah, this is also causing a lot of conflict. So also things are changing in this way. We will talk about it and play some more music now.
Okay.
Oh,
Natural resources such as land for housing or agriculture and wood for cooking or heating are a source of conflict in the refugee camps. How do you govern such fundamental issues and what are you focusing on within the Amuti project?
Thank you very much. So the Amuti project is clustered in five working groups. But I will just mention those that are directly linked to what you've asked. So there's a focus on capacity building at institutional level. So building the capacity of the different institutions from the university that we work with to the local structures in the refugee and host community settlements to build capacity to be able to govern natural resources. And through this project, there's the opportunity to co-create and also learn about the different structural inequalities that are causing challenges when it comes to the governance of natural resources. So there's a key focus in that. That's where we're using transformative approaches, looking at our project activities from an intersectional perspective when we're engaging with the different community actors. We are also in the project facilitating energy access and renewable energy for sustainability. There's a component of that. And then there's also a component of supporting the management of soil and water in the refugee settlement. So we are really focusing on co-creating with the different actors to be able to arrive at mechanisms for sustainable management of these natural resources, because the refugee population is swelling and also the host community population is swelling, but the natural resources are declining because they do not have a capacity or a natural capacity to expand. And so how do we manage these available, resources and be able to leave something for the future generation? Right now, Uganda is the highest is the first country in Africa when it comes to hosting refugees. We have about 1.7 million refugees in Uganda right now, and Uganda is the sixth internationally in hosting refugees. So there's a big population that Uganda is hosting, and we still keep receiving more refugees and asylum seekers from over 10 countries in the world, from as far as Syria, Afghanistan. But the majority of the refugees right now that Uganda is hosting are from South Sudan, from Democratic Republic of Congo. We also have a big number of asylum seekers. About 70% of the asylum seekers right now in Uganda are from Eritrea. All these coming into the country have to find access to where to stay, how to manage whatever resources they have to be able to sustain themselves when in country. And land, water is a very big, you know, resource, and the governance of it is at the heart of our project. Yes.
What about the refugee settlements? Do they provide their schools also for children, education,
yes.
basic education
yes.
for children, youth?
Yeah, yes.
You were also working in the past with young people,
yes.
or maybe still working
yes,
with young
yes.
people.
Yes. So the UN and its implementing partners have partnered with the government of Uganda, overseen by the Office of the Prime Minister in Uganda. And the key areas are, of course, providing basic needs to the refugees, and that includes education, healthcare, food, also opportunities for work. And so we have UNICEF-funded and also funding from multi-global
donors
yeah. funding mm-hmm. education programs in Uganda for refugees and also for the host community. Mm-hmm. Under the UN Comprehensive Refugee Response Framework, any humanitarian assistance given to refugees in Uganda, the framework provides that 70% of this humanitarian assistance goes to refugees and 30% of which goes to the host community. That way, the host community are also able to benefit from the programming that the government and the UN are not only supporting the refugees at the detriment of the host population, but also that the host population gets to benefit from these resources. Mm-hmm. And so they share access to the services that they all need. So they study together, they go to seek medical attention together, support each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there is an interaction between locals and
the refugees. Absolutely.
Refugees. This
yes.
is, again, another very important dimension, the inclusion of refugees.
Yes. Like I said, the refugee system is, the refugee regime in Uganda is in such a way that refugees settle in the community. And in as much as they are in settlements, in these settlements, they are also community members. So they are not excluded in camps like the case in many other countries. They don't live in exclusion. They live together with the people that have given them land to settle in as much as these settlements are slightly outside of the busy city areas. But when you look at the urban refugees, so the settlements are located in the rural areas, and we also have a group of refugees that have settled in the urban areas, and they make up quite a big number, and they in the urban areas live as neighbors with the natives. And yeah. so they also, the government also has special programs for the urban refugees, and they also incorporate the host communities. For example, in Kampala, the capital city, where majority of the urban refugees can be found, they work together with the different organizations. They work with community members and are able to serve the community as much as contribute to, like I said, the social and economic development.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we already mentioned, you said migration is increasing, and not only due to crisis and civil wars within the continent, but also from outside. And you said there are 1.7 million refugees now in Uganda, but Uganda itself is not that big, not that large. So how can we imagine how many people are living in, how many Ugandan, how many locals do you have compared to also the amount of, huge amount of refugees?
Mm-hmm. The recent census in Uganda puts Uganda's population to about 40 million, 45, I think, million, I'm not so sure, but around there. And the host communities, the Currently, the refugees make about half the population of the host communities. Mm-hmm. So in most of the host communities, you find that the refugee number is nearing half of what the host community is. And the refugee settlements are distributed across the country. We have those in the northern part of the country, and there are some in the southern part of the country. And so the refugees are distributed in these different settlements. So we have about 13 districts that are hosting refugees, and over 10 settlements. So these refugees are clustered according to their the country of origin. Also, furthermore, for example, for the case of South Sudan, into maybe which tribal community they come from, because there are certain tribal communities that do not
shouldn't be brought together.
They are separated to reduce the tensions that could emerge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have that. That's about it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you see within your work within the Amudi project also that there is something changing between the locals and refugees, that there is, yeah, since there is also more need for natural resources, that there are tensions more on that? Or
so the Amuti project has just started, but from our preliminary interactions with the community members, we see that both the refugees and the host community members are eager to work to find solutions on how to manage. For example, there is conflict arising from use of grass for touching the houses. Grass is a very important commodity to touch houses, because they don't use iron sheets, for example. Very few can afford it. So what is locally available and ready for use with the local knowledge is the grass for touching houses. And so in the past, there have been conflicts arising from sharing this grass, but also access to wood, for example, wood fuel. With the influx of refugees, it also led to land degradation, and also some areas suffered deforestation, so which also caused conflict. And so what the government has done is to offer opportunities for dialogue. The government, UN and other implementing partners constantly offer opportunities for dialogue to check the tensions within the community. So we have not, in a long while, we have not had conflicting situations, but in the past there have been conflicting situations that have, you know, erupted from some of these tensions, leading to, you know, burning down of houses for over 20 families of the sort. So with constant dialogue on how to manage, how to govern, and how to share the available limited resources, those tensions have been able to be kept in check. And in this project, we are also going to keep exploring some of the traditional knowledge on how to manage. What are the, you know, we're looking at what are the elements in traditional knowledge that we can work together with science to be able to govern well. So we look at what are some of the social norms, what are the existing inequality structures in these norms, how can we address those structures to be able to, you know, to be able to, for example, have voices of women when it comes to natural resource management, because women's work is surrounded, it revolves around natural resources. They too get to have a say in how this is governed. How can we incorporate their voices? The youth, they may not be in positions of power to make decisions, but they are constantly building their skills around natural resources. What are their views? How can we incorporate their views? And how can we, these different collective voices. How can we harness knowledge from that to be able to, you know, co-create frameworks that we can use to manage and govern the available resources? Yeah.
Women and girls' rights are very important also within the project. So yes, the gender roles or gender topics are, should be also, we are within an important topic within the academic projects. Mm. And we want to talk a bit more about it. And also, on the other hand, the traditional views on what women are able to say or not, how they can position themselves. Mm-hmm. And more on traditional knowledge also. Cooperating, co-working with science, how this is going together. We will talk about it after a music break.
Okay.
Christmas show today, the last Welt im Ohr for this year. Usually we do our broadcast in German, but now we have the pleasure to have Caroline Paparo. She is originally Ugandan and doing her PhD here in Austria, Vienna at Boku University. Caroline, we were talking about the role of women and girls, in particular the women and their rights. And as you once told me that traditionally women don't have their own. So how is this to understand within also your project, within the refugee communities, the refugee settlements, but also the locals that bring their cultures, their also different cultures and traditions within this a whole situation which is in general not easy at the moment for no one until people are settled. And I don't know how long are people living, for example, in Uganda.
Yeah.
Do they used to stay there then? And do they go back also to their home countries and so on and so forth? So, but now for the first question, how about women and traditions?
Okay. Thank you very much for that question, Mayada. So the West Nile, maybe for a little context, the West Nile region is at the northwestern part of Uganda, bordering South Sudan to the north and Democratic Republic of Congo to the west. And so the West Nile region is privileged to host many refugees because of several reasons. Among them is proximity. And because of proximity also, the communities in West Nile and in areas of Eastern Congo and Southern South Sudan, they share cultures. And in one of the things in these shared cultures is the responsibilities and the place of women when it comes to issues of land. For example, in my Lubero culture, there's a saying that okuma pario, which means a woman has no place. A woman has no, if you translate it loosely, really, a woman has no place. She has no voice. She has, you know, she has to live when a girl is born, she lives by what her father says. And when she's in her teenage years, she lives by, you know, she has to follow the directive of her brothers. When she gets married, she has to follow the directive of her husband, you know. And so at the end of the day, her identity is chained to the men in her life. And so with that comes even things like having a voice, having an opinion, owning property and things like that. And so in as much as their work, their roles is revolves around natural resources, because traditionally women are the teachers, they are the custodian of knowledge. So even information about, for example, herbs, for example, conservation practices, they are the gatekeepers of traditional knowledge, they are the gatekeepers of traditional rules and regulations. And sadly, also, they are the gatekeepers of patriarchy, I must say, traditionally. And so they play these important roles and yet still do not have a say. So in this project, we try to, we dive through dialogue, we dive into some of the traditional traditional understandings of the interaction between men and women with nature, with natural resources, and we try to understand some of the structural inequalities that could negatively impact the governance of natural resources. And it's also an opportunity for us to make aware how some of the negative cultural practices may be contributing to bad governance of natural resources and thereby creating barriers to effective, you know, governance. And so through these dialogues, we are able to arrive at meeting points where men and women agree that what agree on what needs to change, agree on what can be salvaged, and what practices that they can adopt from the traditional cultures and merge with science, because our science helps us to understand what's happening, helps us to understand human interaction with the environment. And so with that, we're able to also understand with these scientific frameworks how they're living their lives and how their human interaction with each other is affecting the environment, and interaction of men and interaction of women separately affects the environment, and looking at all those different dynamics and seeing merging points from where action can be developed. Yes.
You already mentioned an NGO working within your project. So maybe the role of this NGO, is it kind of an important also player that is providing kind of trust and...
Yes, yes. So we're working with PALMCO. PALMCO is the local NGO in Uganda that works with refugees, supporting refugees, building their capacity in farming, and also building their skills to be able to arrive at self-reliance. And they are our entry point into the refugee settlement, because the refugee question is a political and high security issue, and so not anyone can get access to refugees. So through our partnership, we're able to have access and work with the refugees, and so we are working through their working groups. They already have existing structures within the refugee settlement, the beneficiaries of their project, and so we are working through their beneficiaries to be able to understand how the workings are happening. One of the transformative approaches we're using, the GALS approach, gender action learning approach, where we also examine their other programmings using this framework to understand if they are offering a gender sensitive program to the refugees, how are they doing it. So just studying to learn how they incorporate gender action in their programming. So they really are our gateway into the community, and they offer that trust. Yeah, because we cannot just walk into the settlement and say, oh, we're here, we want to work with you. No, they're procedures. So they are key for our protocol for entry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So science can transform humans' lives for better. And such a project is a very short period, 3 or 4 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. So how do you make sure, for example, that it is also kind of sustainable, that it could help or contribute much longer than this funded period of your project or another project, for example?
Yeah, so this project is executed through an action research framework. And so with action research, we have the opportunity to co-create with the community members. That way, we do not come into the community with this top-to-bottom approach, or come into the community with the notion that we are the knowledge holders. Rather, we come into the community as co-parties, that the rights holders are also the knowledge holders. We are here to exchange and learn. So we may come with the science, and they are coming with their lived experiences. And what can we harness? How can we merge these two and work together and co-create together? So from this project, to ensure sustainability is also by ensuring that from the inception, the community members, the local government, the actors have been involved from the ideation of the project to the implementation, such that they really get to, we're rolling the project, we do have also a summer school program. And like I said earlier, one of the components is capacity building. So through the capacity exchange, we're able to build capacity of the university in Muni. We're able to build capacity of the local leaders, the refugees, the students who will be part of the summer school, will build their capacity so that activities within the project can continue even long after the project has closed, because already we'll have capacity built. And then also they will be using what they have learned the science methodologies, for example, to continue co-creating in the future to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned traditional traditional knowledge many times now.
Yes, yes.
Maybe a few words on that. So how can we imagine, how do you bring in a traditional knowledge into mm-hmm. science?
How do we, for example, I'll give an example. If you go to a community that uses a well, and you don't know how they draw their water, they teach you how they draw their water. And you use your science to understand if this water is good for consumption or not. So with that's the kind of analogy I would say. So we engage with the community at a level whereby we respect the knowledge that is in the community, and we also respect the knowledge that we have, and we examine our frame, we use our frameworks to examine the knowledge that they have and also learn. It's from using our frameworks we get to learn what is new, we get to know what are the gaps in literature. We get to know, oh, how did we miss this? This is something new. This has changed. So we're also able to study the trends, because as human beings, we are evolving. And as human beings that migrate, that move, everywhere we go to a new place with pieces of the experiences from where we were. So the refugees that have come into Uganda with their traditional knowledge, with their way of life. They've come into the country with how they prepare their food, how they serve their food, how they interact with each other. And so, which practices may be foreign or may be similar, and so how that also influences how the host community members do life is important, because then it will inform their interaction with natural resources, you know. So we use our science to study some of those differences that have not, you know, phenomena that has not existed before. For example, in our preliminary engagements, we notice that, for example, gender roles are shifting because of the status quo the refugees are in now. They come from a community where men, for example, were the head of the household. They made all the decisions. But now they're in the refugee settlement situation. And because men are always on the move, some go back to South Sudan or go look for work, and the woman is always at home with children. When UN comes to verify, the men give the women permission to register as head of household, so that the women then receive whatever aid that comes, and then they also have autonomy to decide how to use this aid. So we see certain gender roles shifting, and this informs how men and women interact with each other, but most importantly also the decisions they make when it comes to, you know, interacting with soil, with water, and things like that. Yeah. So the traditional knowledge is very important. It's important for us to understand it, because then it informs us on how they interact with the policies that they are to live by, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be top down, as you said.
Yes.
So everything is tailored, and
yes.
Yeah, people should follow something that they are not used to, they mm-hmm. don't leave, maybe they also don't understand, and at least they don't accept.
Yes, and it can breed resistance, you know, it can breed resistance and conflict, because, yeah, so it's important to factor in what knowledge they bring, because the knowledge they bring is rich, and also some of them come with skills. Because, for example, in the camps, you may find there are doctors and nurses who were nurses and doctors in and teachers in South Sudan. But here in the camp, they're just, you know, they don't have that opportunity. And so because the health or education facilities do not have enough staff, so they are able to incorporate them into the service delivery system, and they're able to, you know, support with human resource, and they're able to also teach the Ugandan servicemen how to handle, because the mannerisms, the behaviors are different. They're able to teach them. So if they act this way because of a certain issue, maybe this is what it means. So, yeah, things like that that could really alter how communities see the world and interact with each other and with the environment. Yeah.
We want to make a final short music break and then maybe talk just a little bit about how you do Christmas in your family, your community, a little bit. It's okay. Christmas time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
On my way on that long, long road, I meet an individual. On my way, there are many, many stones. On my way back
Caroline, how do you spend Christmas time? Maybe a few sentences. Is it the same like in Austria, Vienna?
Well, we don't have Christmas markets, but we do have, there's a lot of evening markets where women come and sell produce from their gardens. Yes, it's sort of like a Christmas market, but not really a Christmas market. But yes, families meet. It's the one time in the year when family comes together. And church and food. Yes, a lot of food.
Thank you so much for being our guest today, Caroline. We'd like to thank also Momo Kunishio. She did the techniques for us. Thank you, Momo. And we're broadcasting live from the Austrian Broadcasting Corporation. And we want to say thank you to our listeners. And hear us again in January. This was Welt im Ohr with me, Mayada Hadaya. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everyone. Bye-bye.